ESPN Daily is presented by Goodyear, making the plays that move you forward. Goodyear, more driven. Hey guys, it's Pablo, and if you caught the Giants-Patriots preseason game and you got reminded of their recent history, you're going to want to hear today's show about this very loaded rivalry, because this is a respin of one of our favorite episodes, and it's all about how a Patriots superfan pulled off the heist of the century and stole a set of Super Bowl rings from the Giants. It is Wednesday, September 1st. This is ESPN Daily.
If the Patriots had won that game against the Giants, do you think your life turns out exactly the way it's turned out?
If it wasn't that one, it was going to be another one. I know what the consequences are. You know how I view this? I view it as an occupational hazard. They call us crime dogs. I'm a crime dog.
That's our own Sam Borden interviewing a man named Sean Murphy from prison. Murphy is a Patriots superfan from New England. He also happens to be a master thief. Today, the incredible story of how football, a multi-million dollar heist, and jealousy all came together around a set of Super Bowl rings. Hey, Sam, thanks for joining me.
No problem, Pablo. Glad to be here.
Sam Borden is a global sports correspondent for ESPN and an international man of mystery. So I bring you on here, Sam, today because I am a sucker for Hollywood heist movies. Whenever, like, Ocean's 29 comes on TV, I will watch that film start to finish. And this feature that you reported, it feels like a film that is squarely within that genre. So I want to pull the curtain back here at the top for a minute. How did you come across this story, and what was your reaction when you first heard about it?
You know, look, there are lots of stories that I've reported over my career that have had, you know, some cinematic quality to them, at least in part. But this, I think, is probably the only story that I've done where it literally felt like a movie from start to finish.
So you begin the piece with the finish at the end there, which is very Tarantino of you, by the way. But we have three New England law enforcement officers recovering some jewelry that has a particularly special meaning to that area. What did they find?
Yeah, I mean, that scene resonated with me from the beginning. This is three New England police officers, an FBI agent, a state police lieutenant, and a state trooper. And what they have is a key that they found in a search warrant while searching a house. And they find that it was registered to this small bank in Saugus. And they go there, and the bank manager lets them have access to the room where the safety deposit box drawers are. And they open up the drawer with the key that they found. And inside are several dozen Super Bowl rings that were made after the Giants beat the Patriots in 2008.
The only thing missing was the background music, and the light came down. It was like they were glowing. It was just fantastic to see those rings.
It's such an incongruous scene. You know, you have these New England cops who are dyed-in-the-wool Patriots fans. They all love Tom Brady. They all love Bill Belichick. They all love New England Patriots. And they've spent months chasing after these giant Super Bowl rings, and now they finally found them.
Yeah, there is a larger, much larger story here, Sam. And the rings that you just described in that room, they were part of a much bigger score, actually. So take me back to the beginning. Tell me, who is this guy, Sean Murphy?
Here's where the story really begins. The Super Bowl Sunday, 2008, the Patriots are going for their perfect season, and the Giants are big underdogs.
Super Bowl 42 from the University of Phoenix Stadium will either be remembered as the day the Patriots stayed undefeated, or the day the Giants had one of the biggest upsets in Super Bowl history. Hey, how are you?
Sean Murphy is a longtime Patriots fan, diehard Patriots fan, grew up in Lynn, Massachusetts, and he owns a moving company. That day, he's watching the game with a friend of his. He says that it was his weed dealer, a guy named Rob, and they're sitting there watching the game, and like all Patriots fans, they're crushed by what happens in the fourth quarter.
And he takes the snap under pressure, avoids the rush, and he's going to fight out of it, still fights out of it, now throws it deep downfield, wide open Tyree, who makes the catch.
David Tyree makes that incredible catch. The Giants come back and pull off one of the biggest upsets in football history, and the Patriots' perfect season is ruined. Now, fast forward a few weeks later, Murphy is in the library. And what's he doing in the library when he owns a moving company? Well, his other job, his real career, as he would say, is as a thief.
I'm a professional thief. I'm a master thief. And no matter what I do, I'm a money-making motherfucker.
He calls himself a professional thief, a master thief. And in the library that day, he's doing research on local jewelry companies.
At that time, I was looking to do a jewelry manufacturer because the price of gold was going up. I went into the library and got a list of all the jewelry manufacturers in the New England area.
So he's Googling, he's kind of, you know, getting information about all the different jewelry companies in the area. And as part of his research, he digs into, okay, what do each of these companies make? And so at one point, he Googles EA Dion, which is a jewelry company, family-owned business in Attleboro, just a few miles up the road from Lynn.
When I got to EA Dion, I Googled it, and an article came up that said that you were making the New York Giants Super Bowl rings. And I was like, holy s***.
And right at that moment, he draws a big circle around EA Dion on his list, because in his mind, hey, they're making these rings that the Giants stole from the Patriots.
So hold on here, because how much of a real thief is this guy? Like, what are the tools of his trade here? How professional is he at this?
That's the thing that I think is important to say. This was not a, you know, spur of the moment. Man, I can't believe the Patriots lost. I'm going to go steal the Giants rings. This guy is a professional thief. He comes from Lynn, Massachusetts, which is known by the police, by almost anybody who lives in that area, as sort of a haven for commercial breakers. That's the term that police use for guys essentially who break into businesses. And Murphy has been doing commercial breaks for years. So by the time we get to 2008 and he is looking at jobs to do at jewelry places, he's got a rap sheet a mile long.
So in my mind, Sam, I'm envisioning a little Thomas Crown Affair, but also a lot of Ben Affleck in the town in this character, Sean Murphy. Yeah,
a lot of that. Like basically everybody that I talked to would be at some point during the interview would be like, so have you ever seen The Town? And that was like the point of reference for just about everybody.
So you've got this professional thief from Lynn, Massachusetts, who is capable, fully capable of pulling off a heist like this. So connect the dots for me now. How does he set out to make this happen?
This is not a guy that runs into a job without a plan. He researched EA Dion's inventory. He spent weeks scoping out the location of EA Dion's warehouse, which, as he said to me, was absolutely perfect. You know, you're looking for a place that is away from the main road. EA Dion was in an industrial park. You're looking for a place that has some good background noise. I-95 was right behind EA Dion, so there was the white noise of the highway all the time. You're looking for a place that doesn't have houses around. No houses anywhere nearby. So on a Saturday night, which is when Murphy planned to do the job, literally nobody is around. And he can go in there and he can break in and he can do his work and nobody's going to be able to see him and nobody's going to be able to hear him. So Murphy spent a long time trying to figure out the right time to do this job. What he wanted to do was time it so that all of the rings would be finished, like they'd have all their diamonds, they'd have everything put on them, but they wouldn't have been sent out yet. So then, about a week before the job, he was stunned when he sees on TV that the Giants are having a ring ceremony.
World champs, baby, world champs.
And I remember he even said to me, he was like, for a minute or two, we even thought about just canceling. All right, we're not going to do the job. But then he realized, like, look, it's not just the rings they have there. There's going to be a lot of gold. There's going to be a lot of jewels, even if the rings aren't there. Let's go ahead and do the job anyway.
So, Sam, we're at the point in the movie, I think, where we can begin to hear the dramatic music filtering in. It is go time. It is time to pull off the heist. So what happens next?
So Murphy and his crew, it's a three-man group that's going to be doing this job. Murphy's the leader. Joe Morgan, who is a car salesman that kind of worked as Murphy's number two at the time, he's going to be with Murphy inside doing the work. And then they have a lookout guy. They call him a peak man, the guy who stays outside and sort of watches to make sure, you know, no cops are coming, no people are around. This guy's name is Dave Nasser. And the three of them, they meet at Murphy's warehouse and they suit up. And Murphy, kind of like he was with the tools, when he's describing to me like what it's like when they're getting ready to go, it's almost like an athlete describing minute by minute, moment by moment, putting on like a football uniform.
We usually wear black coveralls with black ninja masks. On your chest of the flight suits, there's two pockets. In one of them, we put a two-way radio with an earplug that goes up through underneath the mask into our left ear. And in the right pocket, we have a police scanner, which has another earplug that goes up through and goes into the right ear.
They are very, very meticulous about what they wear. They've got their gloves. They've got galoshes that go over their sneakers so that they're not leaving sneaker prints. And they drive in a white rented box truck from Murphy's warehouse over to EA Dion. And they get there a little before the sun is going to set. And the first thing they do is wait. And they just watch the building. And they make sure that it's as quiet as they think it should be. As David Nasser tells it later, they sat and they drank water and they smoked a little weed. And they just looked at the warehouse, essentially, for a couple of hours. Then the sun sets. They climb up on the roof, and the first thing they do is they put Murphy's computer education to good use.
There's a line directly from the alarm company to the business that monitors at all times. So we would get up on the roof, and then we would cut the phone lines.
And they disable the alarm system, and they use a cell phone jammer that essentially makes it impossible for the alarm's backup system, which is on a cellular signal, to call for help. And once they do that, they come back down and they wait again. They wait for about another 45 minutes and make sure that they didn't trip any wires, they didn't do anything wrong. Nobody comes. So they go back up and now the building is defenseless. No alarm system, no backup system. Once they get inside, they're free to do whatever they want. They take out a drill and they start cutting a 4-foot hole in the roof of EA Dion. Once they have that hole, they drop in and the first thing they do is spread out. They open up the door to every office because they've got these big 50-gallon trash cans, like what you or I would use to like take out our recycling. And they're going room to room.
I had actually hit the vault room first, the one that has all the gold. And I was in there cleaning them out while my partner Joe was going around the business just looking around. And about 20 minutes later, I met Joe in a hallway and he said the Super Bowl went to here. I was like, holy shit.
And Murphy's stunned. He's like, what are you talking about? I saw on TV the Giants players already got the rings. And Morgan says, look, I don't know, but take a look at these. And he holds out one of the rings. And Murphy says that even now he remembers it was so heavy. It was like 20 pounds. It just felt like, you know, this big giant jewel in his hand. And he was like, you know what? At the time, I wasn't really interested in trying to figure out what these rings were or how the players had already gotten theirs. He was like, I just knew we had them. They were right there on the desk. Let's take them. In the end, they ended up getting more than $2 million worth of inventory from EA Dion Pablo.
Wow.
And, you know, they cleaned them out. I mean, this is a family-owned business, and they literally cleaned them out.
All right, Sam, coming up, a job completed by those thieves is just the beginning of law enforcement's investigation.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
All right, Sam. So Sean Murphy and his crew, they've pulled off this big score. And by the next day, the police are beginning their investigation.
EA Dion has been making jewelry here for 40 years. Even Super Bowl rings. Police say the place was hit over the weekend, and it looks like it was a professional job.
I want you to take me through that. How did the law get involved here?
Remember, they did this job on a Saturday night, so it's Sunday, and nobody's working on Sunday. So it isn't until late Sunday afternoon that an employee of EA Dion comes to the office. And the only reason that she came to the office that day was because she was trying to access her company email and was really having trouble. And she goes in, and obviously the first thing she notices is a giant hole in the ceiling and the entire place ripped apart, and she calls the police. Initially, Attleboro police respond to that call, and Richard Campion and Jimmy Cody are two of the detectives that are among the first people to get there. And, you know, it's what you imagine.
The second you walked into the building, it was obvious to us that someone had spent a substantial amount of time inside the building, that a large amount of product was stolen from the factory.
Campion remembers how upset the owners of EA Dion were. You know, this is a family-owned business. You know, these two brothers, they've been running the business for years. Their dad started it more than 50 years ago, and they were completely cleaned out. And so in their minds, like, you know, their business is done. Mm. They were so upset. Initially, they find some physical evidence at the scene. As good a thief as Sean Murphy is, he makes mistakes. Campion and Cody, they discover an extension cord up on the roof that Murphy and his crew used to operate the drill that cut through the roof and, you know, let them come through the hole inside the building. They find an electromagnetic drill that Murphy used. He left it accidentally on the loading dock. They find some footprints, you know, from the boots that the guys were wearing, and they collect all this evidence. Once it becomes clear that the scope of this burglary is much bigger than like a typical break-in, an interagency task force, the FBI, the state police, local police, the DEA, all of these agencies work together on some of the biggest crimes. And this task force takes up the EA Dion job because they see it as a continuation of a bunch of other jobs that Lynn Breakers have done for the previous years. And they say, hey, this hole in the roof, this kind of job looks similar to ones that we've seen in the past. We think there's a pattern here. And that's when Al Zani, Jason Costello, and Sean O'Neill, that's when they get involved. When this task force gets involved and says, hey, we've been trying to go after Sean Murphy for a long time. Now, all of a sudden, it seems like we have a job where maybe we can pin him.
Sean Murphy was known to law enforcement as responsible for doing high-end commercial breaks where large sums of money were stolen.
He was the number one commercial breaker in Lynn at that time.
As soon as I heard about EA Dion, the only person that came to mind that was capable of doing such a break was Sean Murphy.
His calling card was a more high-end job. You know, there wasn't a lot of broken glass or like busted down doors when Murphy did a job. There were holes in roofs and there were disabled alarm systems. And so as soon as he saw this case, in his mind, Murphy was the top suspect.
But that physical evidence that was left behind, I mean, if Sean Murphy is so hard to catch and has been so hard to catch for years, why isn't that enough to then go get him? Where do they go once they have this physical evidence?
You know, Zani and Costello said the same thing, which is that the physical evidence was important. All of that helped when it came time to prosecute Murphy. But in terms of literally having enough to arrest him and catch him, they needed more. And so what they needed was someone close to Murphy to talk. And in the beginning,
That was really difficult. Donnie said that they were, quote, shaking the trees all around Murphy's World, trying to talk to everybody who knew him.
So this is where the movie really starts to feel like The Departed. You're introducing these girlfriends, these other characters. Who do the police turn to? How do they advance the case from there?
So, Pablo, it's a little bit complex. You know, Murphy is not at all shy about describing what is a fairly offensive and repugnant setup that he had in terms of his relationship with women. This is a guy who at the time was in his early 40s, and he had multiple girlfriends who were, you know, 19, 20, 21, 22 years old, almost all of whom were struggling with drug addiction. And according to Jason Costello, the FBI agent, it was pretty clear that this was a situation where he was essentially providing them with drugs and they were providing him with, you know, sex and being his girlfriend. And he was not at all shy about ranking them. Essentially, what happened was this. Ricky Lee Brown was Murphy's girlfriend for a very long time. She was his, you know, quote, top girl for the longest time. And at one point, Murphy and Ricky Lee Brown had a big fight at Murphy's house, and the police were called as a potential domestic disturbance. The local police go, they take a statement, and they write up a report. And in the report, they write up that there was another girl there, Jordan Hartman. She was a witness. And, you know, there's no arrest. Nothing really comes from this report. But Zani and Costello see the report because it has Murphy's name in it, and they're keeping track on everything Murphy does. And they say, hang on, Ricky Lee Brown, who's been Murphy's top girl forever, she won't give us much. But now we have this other girl here. Maybe we should try to talk to her. So Jordan Hartman comes in. She's arraigned on this minor charge that she has her warrant out on. And then Zani and Costello come in and they say, hey, look, we want to talk to you about Sean Murphy. All of a sudden, Hartman, she kind of perks up. And it turns out that she and Murphy had a falling out.
There was a breakup. Jordan was not happy with him, and she was happy to sit down with us and tell us everything that she knew.
One of the things that really angered Jordan Hartman is that not long after Murphy returned from doing the EA Dion case, Ricky Lee Brown asked Murphy for a Super Bowl ring.
Ricky Lee pointed at the Super Bowl ring and said, what about one of them? I said, yeah, what the f***? So I gave her one of the Super Bowl rings.
Hartman, who's not the top girl, who's, you know, number three or whatever she was at the time, all she gets is this necklace. And she's pissed. Ricky Lee Brown gets a Super Bowl ring, and I'm getting this, you know, like sort of gaudy piece of jewelry. It's not even expensive. It's not even, you know, diamonds. She was mad. So when Zani and Costello come calling, she's bitter at him.
Somehow they tracked down Jordan, and Jordan told them what she knew. She didn't know much, but she knew enough.
And the testimony of Jordan Hartman led to them getting the search warrant that ultimately allowed them to arrest Sean Murphy.
But wasn't Jordan Hartman, given all of the things she knew about Sean Murphy, wasn't she concerned at all that, you know, this would get out, that she was the one who turned him in?
You know, it's really funny. I was talking to Zani and I said, you know, I asked essentially that exact question, Pablo. I said, like, you know, was she worried about this?
She looked at me and she said, is Sean going to know that I've testified against him? And I was a little taken aback. I figured she realized at this point, but I said, well, you know, yeah, I guess. And her response was, good. I want him to know that it's me who did him.
She went ahead, she testified, they wrote it up, and they got the search warrant, and that was where Murphy's downfall began.
All right, Sam, coming up, the law closes in. But this story doesn't end with just the arrest.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are wonderful pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So the investigation by law enforcement is progressing, Sam, and the team is ready to move in on Sean Murphy, on their suspects. How does that all go down?
Yeah. So imagine, like, before sunrise, super cold January day at the local police station. And we've got 36 officers from all different types of police departments, FBI, ATF, DEA, everybody has come together to get a quick briefing before dawn, and then they're going to go out and execute these search warrants. So it's like 6 a.m. and a crew of police show up at Sean Murphy's house and they break in. And honestly, the thing that the police say they noticed right away was that it was super cold in the house, as though like they hadn't paid the heating bill, which I guess seems a little bit weird. If you're a criminal and you just stole $2 million worth of jewelry, you would think they'd have enough money to pay the heating bill. But the police remember it being like frigid in the house that morning. They break in, they pull their guns, they show the search warrant, they arrest Murphy, they find him in bed, they arrest him in his underwear.
They came in my house and they raided me, and then they caught me with a couple fake IDs and, you know, a little bit of jewelry here and there, nothing major.
At his moving warehouse, same thing. They find some small pieces of evidence. They find some receipts from like one of those places where you can sell gold. They find a list that has a bunch of jewelry manufacturers all in the New England area with EAD on right in the middle, with notes in the margins that Murphy's written about. Here's what kind of cell phone jammer I'm going to need to break this alarm system. Here's what the place looks like from the street. So they find all this evidence. And after the arrests, Murphy's still feeling pretty confident. He's like, you know, in lockup, Campion remembers that he was sort of like, ha, you know, you're not going to be able to prove breaking and entering. You're not going to be able to find any fingerprints or DNA. Essentially, like, I'm too smart for that kind of stuff. The police at that time, though, they already had the testimony from Jordan Hartman. And what happened shortly thereafter was it wasn't just his girlfriends who started talking. At some point, David Nasser, remember the peak man, the guy who is outside,
right?
He ends up telling his story to police as well. And in the end, the combination of the, you know, the physical evidence from the scene, the testimony from the girlfriends, the testimony from, you know, the guys who worked with him on the crew, that's what ultimately led to Murphy serving time for this job that he did at EAD on.
So after years of Sean Murphy being on the run, evading police, he finally has his day in court. Who does he choose to represent him?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, one of the things that I most enjoyed when I was reporting the story was Murphy defended himself largely, which is pretty remarkable. And to be fair, he wasn't bad. You know, there's a hearing that I listened to where the judge literally compliments him and is like, you know, you're better than a lot of the lawyers who stand in front of me. In the end, I think the evidence was there. The crew had turned on him. He had used the same methodology over and over and over. In the end, it was just too much for anybody to deny.
So you talked to Sean Murphy himself for this story. How did he feel about finally being caught and then incarcerated? What did he tell you about that?
Anytime you talk to a criminal, anytime you talk to somebody who's in prison, I've always been fascinated on their perspective. And talking to Murphy, it was like a really fascinating dichotomy, because he still believes that he is a high-level crook. He believes that he's a master thief. He believes that he's, you know, like the top of his game. This is a guy who in prison literally wrote a book that he titled Master Thief that essentially lays out how to be a good burglar.
Mm.
He fancies himself a savant and a professor, you know, when it comes to the art of breaking in. But at the same time, he obviously can't ignore the fact that he's been in prison since 2009. That's, you know, you can't just sort of skip over that part. What I found most interesting, though, is that he didn't seem bitter about that. He understood that this is the life he has chosen.
I know what the consequences are. You know how I view this? I view it as an occupational hazard.
And so, yes, would he prefer not to be in prison? 100%. But I didn't sense a lot of remorse and I didn't sense a lot of regret about the path that he followed. He's a master thief and going to jail is just part of the job.
So the scene in the movie, Sam, where we get to zoom in on the master thief in prison, what does that scene look like?
You know, he wakes up early, gets a little workout in, you know, walks around in the yard. He has a job where he sort of works in the food service part of the prison. He said he watches General Hospital every afternoon. He's been watching that for like 35 years and is able to watch that on the prison TV outside his cell. At night, he has law library time, like we mentioned earlier. He's been representing himself, filing motions and things like that from prison. You know, I said to him, so are you able to like watch sports or movies or, you know, anything like that? And the two things that he said that stood out to me were one, that almost every night there's Star Trek on TV. He said that he likes Voyager the best, which I think is a fairly controversial take.
That's a hot take. That's very much a hot take.
And I said, oh, well, have you been able to watch the Super Bowl, you know, or the NFL playoffs? And he said, absolutely. They get the NFL playoffs in there, and he has been able to watch his Patriots, including in the Super Bowl, where they had the amazing comeback against the Atlanta Falcons.
Toss to White. He's in! Patriots win the Super Bowl! What a comeback!
As well as the other one when they lost to the Giants, which he said, you know, he felt like it must have been some kind of a curse, but the thing that I remember most is that he said when he was watching the Patriots complete their comeback against the Falcons, he said, and this is a quote, he's like, I don't think I've ever been more excited, which I just thought was like kind of an interesting juxtaposition for a guy who's in prison, you know, jumping around screaming as Tom Brady is leading the Patriots on this historic comeback. You know, even in prison, a Patriots fan is a Patriots fan, I guess.
Sam Borden, thank you for telling me the story of this master thief. And I gotta say, I do look forward to the sequel.
I'll bet. Thank you, Pablo. And I'll bet that Murphy is too.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.